Studio 360.
Later on in the show, Carter will tell me all about how film soundtracks get made. But first, a story about some film soundtrack obsessives who formed a band in Bristol, England, 25 years ago. They called themselves Portishead, after a nearby town, and they were so fixated on the soundtracks of spy films from the 50s and early 60s before their time, they made a 10-minute noir film starring themselves. There was no dialogue, but of course, there was a score. In the title card at the beginning of their short, it's on YouTube, the band admits, in retrospect, that, quote, it had grossly underestimated what it took to make a film. So, yeah, the film was kind of meh and nobody took much notice. But that same year, the band released their debut album, and that was impossible to ignore. In 1994, you practically couldn't walk into a coffee shop or a bar without hearing some of those moody, otherworldly songs. That album was released 25 years ago this week, and it was called Dummy.
For me, when I think about Dummy, if anything, it's more about color and it's about texture.
Very intriguing.
It's literally a blue and purple album, but I think that the moods that are kind of associated with that, along with some of the, you know, the black and white noir aesthetic, are really kind of a through line to what is actually invoked by the music.
It was moody.
It made you feel like I was in some spy novel or some James Bond kind of thing.
Cities, cigarettes, black and white, cinematic, aesthetic.
Velvety, cinematic.
It's melancholy, it's sadness, it's darkness.
Loneliness and exile and loss and separation, grief, estrangement.
Goth hip-hop.
Shopping carts being smashed into one another.
Well, it's always hard to describe music. I'm Delphine Blue, club DJ, radio announcer, radio personality, music curator. 1994 was a great music year. There was Guru's Jazzmatazz. Lounging, lounging, mellow out and just lounging. A lot of MC Solar. Massive Attack. Those artists were sort of shaping the sound of what I was playing on the radio. I do remember getting an advance copy of Portishead's album, Dummy. It didn't have the artwork, and the track, oddly, that I connected with first, and I don't know why, was Mysterons. When an album that you've never heard before grabs you from the first moment, that's always a great sign.
Dummy hit just when I was about getting close to getting my sound together, like getting it really there. Portishead was right at the cusp of me getting there. My name is Dan Nakamura. They call me Dan the Automator. I'm a record producer. At that time, I was spending a lot of time working on DJ Shadow's first record, introducing. The Portishead record was really important to me at the time. It just brought a lot of the elements together that I was trying to do. Wandering stars, for whom it is preserved, the blackness, the darkness forever. I was a teenager when Dummy came out, and it was one of those formative albums for me. It became a jumping off point for me and how to think about music and how to write about music. My name is RJ Wheaton. I'm a music journalist, and I wrote a book on Portishead's Dummy for the 33 and a third series of short books about classic albums. Portishead, in its initial version, was Jeff Barrow, who was the producer. You can hear him on turntables, also contributed some drums. Beth Gibbons, Border's Head's vocalist and lyricist, Adrian Utley, guitarist and co-producer, and Dave McDonald, who is the sound engineer, who was not a permanent part of the future band. He wasn't involved with subsequent albums, but had a strong role and influence in the production of Dummy. The way that Dummy was put together was that that original central core of the song was put together in a studio. Much of it using a production method very similar to hip-hop. One of the characteristics of that period of hip-hop was the extensive use of really complicated sampling. So sampling is taking a moment from another record and usually looping it. One of the things that brought the band's members together was a love of soundtracks, especially 60s, 70s, espionage, thrillers. And so the album has these moments, these motifs that draw directly from some of those soundtracks and some of those materials.
You're supposed to listen to it late at night, or you might want to go put on like a trench coat and run out and like whatever the things spies do now. They stab people with like secret needles or something. I don't know.
I like that sound.
One of the things that was crucial to Jeff Barrow was the artifacts of vinyl production, the hisses, the pops, the dust, the crackles, the scratches would all be really fulsome in the sound. And one of the things that the band would do is actually record original pieces of music. And when they had something they liked, they would press it to vinyl and use that to construct new breakbeats, new loops.
It doesn't sound that significant right now because people can just put a file into Serato and scratch it, but it was a real commitment back then. You have to send it out, or you have to have someone has a lathe or something like that to do it.
And in order to make it sound like an authentic 50s, 60s, 70s record, they would wear the vinyl out. They would play it again and again. They would scratch back and forth on it, and they would try and make it feel aged and authentic. But so prominent is some of the vinyl noise, people had actually returned their copies of Dummy to the record store that they bought them because they thought that there was something wrong with them. The vocals and the lyrics were put together quite separately from the underlying music. So Beth Gibbons would receive these treatments for the songs. She would listen to them on headphones, really loud, searching for what the song needs. She described it as fitting, measuring, testing, trying out different lyrics, different melodies. And when she was finished or when she made progress, then the track would be passed back to Jeff Barrow in the studio. And he would not really interfere with the lyrics or the melody, sort of very, very occasionally might suggest a slight melodic change. But what he would do is then readjust the underlying music. And then when they had the song fully together, then she would come in and they would record the vocal. And when they recorded the vocal, they were trying to capture breaths, microphone pops, and trying to make it a really sort of present, intimate vocal recording.
Beth Gibbons is an interesting phenomenon. Her voice is just perfect for Portishead. It's haunting and it's sharp in a cuts right to your bone kind of way. Did you realize no
one can see inside your view? I love her. I think she's fantastic. I think she really set the tone for a decade of singers to follow. Her lyrics are, poof, they cut right through, and that's what you want lyrics to do.
Many of the lyrics are elliptical. They hint at themes. They ask questions. Beth Gibbons is sort of moving around questions. They kind of suggest experiences, images, emotional states. It creates this world where, as a listener, you can really feel your own emotional stakes being reflected back to you. How can I finally leave this merry car where the wind blows dry through the falls of a man undenied by his own? You abandon me. So when Dummy came out, critics found it impossible to describe. There are these phrases like urban cool or disc noir or present-day urban blues that are used to describe the music. You would see sections in record stores called things like downtempo and beats and breaks and chill out, lounge, jazzy beats, blunted beats, things like that. Instrumental hip-hop was reaching a wider audience. So there was actually quite a lot of music that was based on breakbeats that was coming out around this time, some of it with vocals over the top. And this label, Trip Hop, came about to essentially collectively describe it.
Trip Hop and hip hop are two completely different countries. They have the word hop in them. That's the only... and maybe a little bit of a beat, you know, but... No, nothing alike. Two totally different animals. Trip-hop is much more moody and trippy, hence the trip moniker at the beginning, I would think. I don't know who coined the phrase, but, you know, what I like about trip-hop is that it's trippy, and I like psychedelic music.
The difference between trip-hop and hip-hop is trip-hop doesn't exist. It was a category made by critics and writers to try to categorize something that they didn't quite understand.
Because so much of the classic trip-hop template was imitated so quickly and became such a paint-by-numbers exercise that many of the most creative artists didn't really want anything to do with it.
No one who made records that people considered trip-hop at the time would ever consider themselves trip-hop, so that's why I kind of say it doesn't really exist. At this point, there are probably people who do make records and they call it trip-hop, but when you're talking about DJ Shadow or Massive or Portishead, no one was trying to claim that.
Nobody wants to be put in a box. Nobody wants to be categorized.
One of the paradoxes with Dummy is that it was deliberately recorded to be strange, shocking, and disruptive, and almost avant-garde. And yet, Dummy immediately was the album that you would hear in every coffee shop or at every restaurant in the background. That album in some ways became a victim of its own creative success. They'd achieved what they aimed to achieve so well that people felt like they could put it on in the background with the volume turned down. For the band, this experience of how Dummy was absorbed into the culture, how it was heard, how it was played, and then how quickly it was imitated by other bands, was this sort of profoundly alienating experience for them.
Bands make music, and then what happens next is out of their control.
You can't control your fan base, I guess, or your audience. You can't make music and go, these kind of people are supposed to listen to it, or these kind of people are going to listen to it. It just happens.
But in spite of how often you could hear it in the background in a coffee shop in the mid-90s, Dummy still retained this power to surprise and to shock and to catch people's attention. Dummy is an album that seems to be very well respected among some of the best hip-hop producers of the last 15, 20 years. For many people, if they've had an important experience with this album, it's been because they discovered it themselves and its strangeness spoke to them in a very direct way.
Dummy could easily have sounded gimmicking after 25 years. What continues to work for me is partially because the album itself was so different to anything that had come out before. It really stands on its own, and it's not cute. It's intelligent, it's experimental, it's smart, it's beautiful, it's emotional. I just wanna be a woman. I don't know. Some of those things contribute to why it still works.
Dummy has influenced me in a lot of ways. I would say it's pretty close to home, you know, and the whole way they use the music and the strings and the vocal. I can listen to it right now and be pretty happy with where I am, you know, like musically speaking and technique and production.
I'm really glad that Portishead made the album Dummy. It made my time on radio at that moment so fulfilling. There are so many great songs on that album. The whole thing was just out of this world.
So tired of playing, playing with this bow and arrow. Gonna give my heart away, leave it to the other girls to play.
That was Delphine Blue talking about the Portishead album Dummy, which came out this week in 1994, exactly 25 years ago. We also heard from Dan the Automator and RJ Wheaton. Jenny Cataldo and BMP Audio produced that story.